Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann, and I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres, Nick. How are we doing? Hanging in there?
Hey, you know, strikes and gutters, ups and downs. It's 24 games in, and we're 12-12.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah. Well, we're also joined by somebody hitting over 500, Dallas McLaughlin.
Celebrate average times. Come on.
Yeah. So Dallas, before we get started, before we get into the Padres, what's it like releasing your sophomore storytelling album?
Well, it's frustrating. I'll tell you that.
Really?
Because the platform I use for distribution, TuneCore, decided that it didn't want to send it to iTunes or anywhere else. And it took me forever to get a hold of them because they don't do anything except for email. But then another local musician, big shout out to Rob Dees, was like, hey, they suck in communication, but if you at them on Twitter, they will totally get back to you. And so I did. And within like 20 minutes, they reached out. So the problem is being
dead.
Fixed. Email is dead. The problem is fixed, that they said there was a problem. It wasn't a problem. And whatever. So now it's fixed. Should show up in, it's already on YouTube Music. It should show up in all the rest of the stores either tomorrow or Wednesday. So, or I guess Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever this comes out. So I'm excited about that. It feels good. I'm excited about the album. It's a little different than the last album. The last album, there was some more heartfelt, sad stories. This one's just about me having run-ins with authority and screwing up opportunities left and right.
Yeah, on the sophomore album, there's a lot less Nick McCann stories on it, I guess.
although you are a part of a lot of the stories still.
I'm working in the background. That's fine, and I want the version of me to live on as you see it. this version.
Nick, we are one and the same. And the only thing that I feel bad about the first album is that I just had to edit out all the stuff about me. I feel bad about that. I'm sorry. That's just how it had to go. It was time constraints.
Well, just check out all the albums on your Bandcamp. What's the best place to?
I mean, the best place financially to support me is Bandcamp. Dallas McLaughlin on Bandcamp.com. DallasMcLaughlin.bandcamp.com. Because you can pay, it says you can pay $7, which is what I'm charging, but you can pay more if you want. It doesn't matter. But also, like, the thing is I get like the lion's share of that money. Whereas, like, iTunes, I get like 20 cents for a stream. On Bandcamp, if you pay $7, I get like $5 of that. So, like, it's big. It's a big deal. And honestly, like, I'm very excited about how many people already bought it. It's pretty awesome. The people already went to Bandcamp and bought it. I know a lot of folks are waiting for it to come out on Apple Music. I've even heard that from people, which I understand. Like, teaching people how to use Bandcamp, I feel like, is teaching people how to use podcasts in 2009. You know what I mean? Yes. Where it's just like, what are you talking about? And you're like, it's really easy. You just go here, and they're like, nope, you lost me.
Use another app.
That's like what Bandcamp is, which I get. So, but anyway, the people who went out of their way to do that, it's awesome. So thank you.
Well, yeah. And if you can wait maybe to one of the days where Bandcamp really gives it to the artists, like, isn't there like those special days where they
do Bandcamp Fridays? It's almost every Friday. They give 100% to the artists. They don't take any money. So
wait till Friday, guys.
Wait till Friday. And also, if you want to get it on Apple Music or whatever, I'm not offended either way. Like, you know what? I didn't go into this expecting to make a profit. And it's totally fine if I don't. This is an art form that I feel is important to get out there to the people.
Yes.
And I really like doing it, and I want to keep doing it. And that's all that matters to me.
Cool. Well, it's exciting. I hope there's a third in the trilogy, at least.
There's a third album that's going to come out next year. And then, I'm working on a new hour long thing. That I'll hopefully debut the year after that. So
look for Dallas Hard with a Vengeance, or dies with, I don't know.
The next album will be probably like an EP more than anything. Okay. I think it'll be less stories, but it'll be a lot sadder than this one.
Good.
Anyway.
Well, I mean,
so much to look forward to.
I know. Oh, that's exciting. I didn't know you had all these things coming up.
Dude, I have one story. Here's the thing, Nick. You know how like you weren't sad. You were actually very kind and gracious about the first album. But there's a story that I have that I wrote that it went over really well, and it's about like a sex thing with me. And I'm like, do I put it out as like a single almost, you know? It's still debatable. I don't know if I'm going to do it yet, but a Lucy.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I think you should. I think it's a good idea.
Okay. All right. Anyway. Yeah, wow. Man, it's been very cool. Not as cool, Nick, as Fernando Tatis going one for 13 and still somehow making the cover of every Padres social media post.
Yeah. I mean, we can start there. I mean, we haven't really talked in a while. The team is back. We're playing games. It's happening.
And
Tatis is back. What was it like for you guys seeing him in major league action in a Padres uniform? Did it feel restorative or kind of confusing? I don't know. Where are you at, Travis?
Yeah, I would say confusing more than anything. He doesn't seem like the same person at all to me.
Really?
As far as his enjoyment for being there and playing. And I don't know why he looks awkward in the outfield. He throws weird. But other than that, I think it's great that he's back. I think it's good for the team. He hasn't been the spark plug we remember him being, right? Has he? He had a home run, which is nice, but it's just kind of, I don't know. It feels really weird right now. The chemistry on the team. I don't know if that's.
It does feel weird. Yeah, I think that's.
I would say, I mean, like, it is funny to me that like he did absolutely nothing other than that home run since he's been back. However, did we go like 4-1 since he's been back?
Yeah, I mean they brought it back
3-1 500.
So he clearly like meant something to the team just being present, because we kept going like tit for tat back and forth, if not losing a few in a row. And then he comes back on the team and it's like immediately the team was energized. I mean, what, we scored like 5 runs in that first game he was back. You know, the chemistry feels weird, but it doesn't at the same time. To me, it feels like almost like too familiar. Whereas like last year, this was also new to us, like Soto and, you know, like, last year we were still bitching about Hosmer, you know what I mean? And like this year it's like, we don't have anything to bitch about. And like Nola is probably the biggest thing we could all complain about, which, by the way, happy to complain about Nola. Just what a sad person to watch play baseball. But like, other than that, like, it's like we get to sit and watch this team now. And it's almost like, I think the only weird chemistry thing I'm feeling is that like I'm not allowed to be sad, like where it's like people before were like, you can't be sad, look at what you got, how dare you be sad, where, and I'd be like, you know, F you, like you can't tell me how to be a fan. But this year I literally feel like I can't be sad, like, right. I feel guilty for being sad. That's the chemistry difference to me.
Well, yeah, no, here's why
you're not sad yet. You have not gone to a game and you have not bought a beer and a hot dog. Once you do that, you will be extremely sad.
That was going to be like our third topic. I want the Travis.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to jump.
We'll get to that. The Travis Russell in-game experience live in the hot. I want that coming up. But I think, Dallas, I think you're right. Like, it did seem very important for fans to have him back, but maybe, I don't know. Do you think that maybe there is some residual awkwardness just from him not being there? He's kind of like they had this amazing experience last year as a clubhouse, and then he comes back into it and, you know, he's perceived to be, you know, with reaching his potential, having the highest ceiling of any of the players on the team. Right. I mean,
well, from what I see,
comes back, it's like, it's different. Yeah.
It is different. And from what I've seen so far, it seems like he's just kind of keeping his head down and playing the game. Yes. Which I think he has to do. I don't think he has another choice. Like, I don't think you're going to see the joyous Tatis that we are used to seeing for probably another month or so. I think it's going to take him a while to get back into the swing of things, literally. And at the same time, like, feel like he's earned that spot back on the team. Cause it, like you said, Nick, there, I bet there is a lot of residual feelings from the team when it comes to last year. And I think they're, this is me speculating, but it probably is like, show us on the field that you're ready to be here. And then we can kind of have fun again. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So we'll see. I don't know. That's all speculation, but I feel like he has to earn it back and it's going to be a few weeks until we see it.
Yeah. I mean, I just wonder what the dynamics, I mean, we remember when, you know, he did get suspended and it was coming off of the injury that he, you know, did to himself and, you know, the motorcycle and everything. And, you know, I think there was stuff before he left where it, you know, we had the blow up on the field in the dugout with Manny. And there were some quotes, I think Musgrove had, it's like, who is this guy? Like he's clearly the most talented, but he acts like he's on this other, you know, playing field. I think that doesn't just go away. We just reset and everybody's fine. I mean, he still has an ego. He still is the most talented Padre potentially, and it's something to watch, and it's going to be, you know, I think what you're also saying, Dallas, about like as an for the experience as a fan, I do feel, and it might be reflected in our output as a podcast, it's like I don't know how to not be conflicted or sad or disappointed in the team. I'm kind of just, you know, they're a 500 team right now, it's the first month, and I don't feel the right to be too overreactive, or, you know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like, okay, the offense is struggling and I need to just be completely out of my mind and the sky is falling. Mm-hmm. We also don't have a manager to blame, really. I mean, we can nitpick Melvin's moves. And if you're still pissed off about not putting in Hader in the playoffs, fine. I don't think that's really stuck to him that much, but you know, we don't have like Tingler or Green or the end of Bud Black's era where we can point to the manager being this problem, because he's not. I mean, he's proven himself. He's beaten the Dodgers. That seems off the table for us.
Yeah.
So where do we go? And we've talked about this before, you know, like the theory, the idea that like the fan base, and I think all fan bases have this, where there is a laser beam of frustration, and it has to be pointed to somebody. And I think you're right. It is right now pointed at Nola. Like he's the one that everybody's putting all their blame and frustration on. I think that's kind of interesting, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting because it's deserved. Like he hasn't looked good since he became a Padre. And it doesn't make like any, and like you kind of hit it, like, we can't make fun of, or we can't like get mad at Bo Mel. Like that's off the table. We can't really get frustrated with like the team because they're at 500. We knew it was going to take a little bit of time for this team to play together well with like the changes that happened on the team, new guys, the relief pitching has been less than great. It's been suspect. Our starting pitching has been all over the place because of injuries. Like it just doesn't seem like we've had a complete team yet, and we're still, you know, not totally there. So it's like at every turn when I want to get like mad and frustrated, I'm like, we're only 24 games in the season, and this isn't the Kemp, Middlebrooks, Upton squad where it was like they put together this team of all stars, and from the get go, people were like, this will not work out. Mm-hmm. And all of us Padres fans were like, who gives a shit? This is awesome.
We have names that we recognize.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out. It was a mess. This time around, it's like, everybody's like, yeah, they're going to finish first or second in the division. They should be in the playoffs. And if they start slow, it doesn't matter. They're still going to come out and they're going to win games. And like, you're like, yeah, that makes sense. That all checks the boxes for me. Like I'm not mad. Like Cronenworth, you know, I went on Ben and Woods, last week, and I was bitching about Cronenworth, and Ben pulled up the stats from Cronenworth's beginning of the season in 2022, and they're almost identical to 2023. And I don't remember at the end of 2022 going, I hate Cronenworth. You know, it's like we had to put it into perspective. I think the hopes were so high, but the one person who seems to be this black hole in the lineup besides Kim, is Nola. Soto. Like Nola just seems.
Well, we'll get to Soto and Manny later, but I think no,
we get time to start. Like Nola just, but the thing about Nola is he's not young. He came of age at the position. Old, he was old. He kind of came out of nowhere with the Mariners. We traded for him because we had Hedges and a bunch of other crap. They didn't want to give it to Camposano because nobody apparently likes him. So like, here we are again. We have once again, we're the Padres. We have crap catching. It doesn't matter because they're good defensively and the pitchers like them. So just give them the automatic out every time they're up. But then like Nola has that Hosmer thing where he'll go 1 for 5 in a game, but that one will be like the 9th inning RBI that wins the game. You know what I mean? Like that'll be the one hit he gets, but he'll strike out in every other high impact situation. Like it just, I audibly laughed at his at bat the other day. Like it was in my car listening and I laughed out loud when he struck out because yeah. It's just so sad. But then you go, well, you know, everybody else is good. So I don't really have the right to be mad at Nola, but you kind of do because it kind of sucks. Like you have Campy in the corner. Why can't we just let Campy play all the time? Who gives a shit if the pitchers don't like him very much? Put your big boy pants on. Like, I just don't understand what the problem is.
Well, also Nola is, it's not just that he's like a defensive only catcher and he can't hit. It's he's also getting, they're stealing on him at an alarming rate. And that's I think what really tips it over for Padres fans is that it's you're noticing the catcher more than you mm-hmm. want to. Even if you don't have a special offensive catcher, at least you know you don't think about the catching position that much if he's just playing good defense. He's just getting, people are stealing on us when he's in the game more. More than ever since he's been here. It's kind of amazing.
Well, it's because he's old.
Yeah,
it's like he's not a young spring chicken. Like people
no. Also, Camposano's not really taking the job, and I think that's what maybe he just doesn't get along with the pitchers as well. But I don't know. It's like if you want to go back to the Hedges versus Mejia debate, which tore apart families, and we spent a long time, 2 years on essentially. It's like it's kind of the same thing. Like okay, Austin can't hit. Can Mejia take the job? No, he can't. I mean, he never did. And I don't know what Camposano's like. I don't know what their plan is with him. I mean, obviously he's more gifted offensively, but they don't. It doesn't seem like Bob Melvin trusts him at all.
And I get that. It feels like there is some trust in Austin Nola from the team. Great, that's fantastic. Whatever, mm-hmm. But it seems like we're just in a holding pattern until this Ethan Salas kid. You know, turns 19 and can be, you know, go to the pros. Like that feels like where we're at. And it's like, if that's the case, great. Can't wait. Can we just get somebody who doesn't make me mad then at the catching position? Can we just get somebody who swings the bat once in a while instead of watching 2 strikes down the middle of the plate and then swinging at a breaking ball at his ankles? Like it doesn't make sense to me that we have to watch. Like I was talking to this guy the other day, the last catcher, Nick, the last catcher that I was a Padre fan, I was excited about a Padre catcher in the system was Wiki Gonzalez. That was the last Padres catcher that was in our system that I was excited about becoming a Major League Baseball player. And he sucked. And Ben Davis sucked.
Ben Davis, and Tom Lampkin. That was mine.
It was Ben Davis versus Wiki Gonzalez. That was that debate. Who gets it? Ben Davis or Wiki Gonzalez? Ben Davis or Wiki Gonzalez? They both sucked.
Yeah.
And then it's Nick Hundley. And then it's Tom Lampkin. And then it's, we had that guy, Derek, whatever, from the A's that came over and that was playing for us in the Kemp era. And he sucked. And the Ramon Hernandez, which was the one guy that I was excited about. And we knew we weren't going to be able to keep him because he was good. And so he got a deal somewhere else. And then he wound up sucking anyways. Like, we have not had a good catcher since Carlos Hernandez. That is the last actual good catcher we have had on the San Diego Padres. And that has been, that's what, not 20 years ago.
25 years ago.
Right? 25 years of shit backstops. Like, we had to get excited.
We grew up on Benito, which is kind of like weird because that's the one thing we could hang our hat on was our catcher.
And Terry Kennedy was decent, right? I mean,
Terry Kennedy was decent. And then you had Carlos Hernandez for a long time. And then you, even Jim Leyritz, who, you know, ran himself out of town, but Leiritz was a solid backstop. Like Piazza, we had Piazza for a little while. It's like
we did.
It's like you just. It's like it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Did he play games at catcher at that
point? Yeah, he did. He played a lot of games at catcher. Yeah, yeah. I just don't understand, like, you know, why we have to sit and watch another shit catcher as Padres fans. Like, it's just like, great, we have 45 great shortstops. It would be awesome if we could get one good catcher. Mean,
to me, it's like maybe you roll the dice and you hit on like a Realmuto or like, you know, what Joe Mauer was supposed to be. That can happen. But
Joe Mauer was great.
Oh, I know. But like, yeah. I just think like most baseball fans would say they just, and me included, just like, you just want a catcher who you don't notice. It's just, it's airtight defense and whatever offense you get is like a bonus, well, you look which at, I would take, but yeah.
Maybe I'm old school, but I disagree with that. I think the catcher's like the quarterback. You know what I mean? He's got to be able to.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
be the total like threat of the offensive team.
Output.
Yeah. But I don't that's know. The why great, the I great think... catchers and the great teams, the catcher was an offensive threat. And I don't see why it's such so hard for catchers to hit, because you're watching pitches all the time. It's very confusing to me.
Makes no sense.
Like, that's why catchers are such good managers, because they have the whole game visualized to them. Their perspective of the game is the one that the hitter has. It's just weird to me that you can't translate that, you know, a couple inches from where your head is to be able to see the ball, because, and then you should also know what's coming, because you're at the entire game, you should be thinking about, what am I going to throw next? Within the context of the game plan, you're the one game planning with the pitcher. I don't know. Catchers should be able to hit just by the nature of the game.
Here's the thing. Two things about that. One, 100% think the same exact thing. It makes no sense to me that every catcher on every team isn't the best hitter on the team. Makes no sense to me. But two, it also proves to me that we don't know anything about baseball.
That might be true.
Well, I think what they're doing is like, in the lower levels of baseball, if you show that you have like a real offensive talent, they're just not letting you catch, you know, like, but I it's think like, it's starting at the lower levels. They're just not letting the top offensive, like the top hitting prospects, they're kind of pushing them out of being catchers.
But it just doesn't make any sense to me, because then you wind up with guys like Nola, who, you know, he finally broke the bigs as a catcher, but then he's not old, but for a catcher who's going to be catching every day, he is a little older than he should be. And like, that's a wear and tear gig. So it's like, you know, it's a situation that I feel like isn't a winning situation for him or for the team. And that sucks. I think if he was at least hitting something at some point since he's been a Padre, I wouldn't feel so pissed off at watching him play baseball. But the fact that the guy just cannot seem to get a streak going is really, really frustrating. And I'm like, if I have to watch somebody suck, I'd rather watch a young guy with promise suck than an old guy who's on his way out.
Yeah.
A young guy like Austin Hedges, huh?
No,
true. You're not. No. He's hitting, his average is slightly better than Nola's this year.
I'm willing to bet, though, that Austin Hedges has had 5 at bats.
Yeah.
I don't even think he's starting for wherever he's at.
30 at bats.
House in Claremont.
30
at bats. Definitely... batting 167, and Nola, I think, is batting 137 or something like that. So.
But Nola is probably at what, 70 at bats already? Yeah.
Let's look at the core of the team. That the thing that was built all offseason was basically the four guys, Bogarts, Machado, Soto, and Tatis being together. Now that Tatis is back, the four horsemen of our faith. I don't know if has anybody said that yet. I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
that hasn't delivered yet, except for Xander Bogaerts, who is the best Padre, right?
Yes. Like, yeah, dude.
He's winning like the triple crown of the team, basically.
I love Bogaerts. I've always loved Bogaerts. I drafted Bogaerts when we were doing as a minor leaguer, when we were the first year we did minor league drafts in our fantasy teams, I drafted Xander Bogaerts. I've been a Bogaerts fan for a very long time. I'm so stoked that he's on the Padres. He has been worth every penny so far.
Yes.
A professional.
I love Bogaerts. Yep. I love Bogarts.
I love saying in my house, Xander Bogarts, San Diego Padre, just hit a home run. And it upsets my wife. And when her dad's out here, yeah, rub it in their face. You know, it's
listen, Boston really just doesn't pay players. Boston doesn't pay players. I think that it's, you know, Machado's obviously something's, you know, off with him, but I'm not worried about I remember last year when he was in a skid and people were like, you know, what are you going to do? And he's like, I'm not going to do anything. I'm Manny fucking Machado. Yeah, I get it. I'm not worried about Manny Machado. He'll figure it out. Juan Soto is troubling because this is what last year looked like for Soto. And this is now what this year looks like for Soto after he had an amazing spring training where he's like, I fixed the kink. I fixed the problem. And then he's come right out of the gate and just kind of stunk.
And have you seen many games? Commented on it, and his approach at the plate looks really weird. And when he swings, he looks off balance. I don't know, something's weird. And I didn't follow Soto a lot, so I wasn't I wasn't playing fantasy too much when he came up. I heard lots of things about him, but I didn't pay attention to him regularly. And so I'm speaking from ignorance, and everyone just keeps saying, he's pure talent, just wait. And we waited through last season, and that was fine, but this year feels really different and he looks really bad. I don't mean to say that like I'm being critical of him or whatever. He just doesn't look like he's very good defensively or a generational talent defensively. His arm is not something that I go like, oh my gosh, look, he just let go of the ball and it flew out of his fingers. He's not accurate up and down the line when he throws home. And the Soto shuffle is one of the cooler things I've seen in baseball, but it hasn't panned out to where it's like justified yet. And I'll be patient. I'll give him a whole year. But right now I'm thinking, and what I've been thinking is like, oh my gosh, I feel so bad for the guy. Really, I do. I'm like, someone offered you $400 million. Do you think that's still on the table for him? Do you think someone's going to give him that kind of money after?
I really after don't. What honestly.
Now? It's like 4 months of it's still mediocre baseball. Mediocre, not even like, oh, wow, look, there's flashes of brilliance. It's been 4 months of mediocre baseball.
Yeah. It's weird. Because he was billed as, you know, he is supposed to be this guy who has this off the charts power, but also coupled with insane discipline at the plate. And he has this swagger where it's like the shuffle and that intimidation thing now, but that doesn't play anymore if he's not hitting. And he's hitting under 200 and still gets on base a fair amount. But yeah, it's baffling. And, you know, and I don't know, like, if this doesn't turn around and he goes through a full season like this, I mean, I guess he just maybe takes a small, I don't know what would happen. Somebody will probably pay him though. Right. I don't mind if the Padres aren't the team that does it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he'll have a crap season. We won't pay him. He'll go somewhere else and be the Hall of Fame player that he always, I mean, that's how it goes.
Of course.
Padres fans. But there is something weird about him. And I don't know what it is. And I, you know, listen, Nick and I have been playing fantasy forever. So like Juan Soto has been a fixture in my mind for years. I couldn't have been more excited when he became a Padre. I'm still excited that he's a Padre. I just I don't know when he breaks out of it. Like, I don't know when he goes back to being Juan Soto. And you would figure he's on a team now where it's like last year he they were having so much fun. They're having a blast all times. Yeah. And he has protection in the lineup. It's like he has all the ingredients to be successful. And for whatever reason, he just can't do it. They removed the shift for God's sakes. And he's still batting under 200.
Dominating.
It's like, it's like last year, I feel like everything he hit went right into the shift. And it's like, that's gone. But still somehow he's finding ways to get out.
This year he can't get out of the infield. It's like he walks, he strikes out, or it's like a really weak dribbler to the second baseman. It's a strange.
Yeah, there's something wrong, and I don't know what it is. And I mean, why would I know what it is? But
so what happens if he hits like say he gets to like 30 home runs and turns it around, but not like at some monster season. And it's just like basically what he did last year over the whole season. I mean, do you feel like in the Padres, if the Padres let him walk, do you feel like you could be upset about that at this point? Like, I just don't even, I think they could use those resources. If he has like an okay, like a less than average Juan Soto season or something comparable to what he did last year, somebody will get crazy. And because of his age and that he's physically,
he's so young.
I think obviously the league is adapted to him in a way, and he needs to figure out his adjustment. I think you said that last time, and it's obvious. Like, I think, you know, Saris just had like a piece on that. And it's like, it's clear they're pitching him a certain way, and he needs to adjust and reinvent that, you know. But I just don't like, I mean, I don't know as a Padre fan how upset I would be if they let Juan Soto walk, not just because he's struggling now, but like, how many big contracts do I need them to give out?
Well, and it's and I also think it depends on what the team does. Like, if they don't live up to playoff expectations and Juan Soto has a down year, then it's like, yeah, then we need to find something else that works, you know? And like you said, use those resources elsewhere. It's like, we don't right now, our relief pitching sucks ass. Our starters are very shaky. And who knows what that's going to look like next season. So it's like, we can use those resources in other spots that are actually necessary than overpaying a promising former great outfielder. I mean, more than great, like superstar outfielder who can't seem to put it together in San Diego. So it's like, if that happens, you know, let's say he turns around and he just goes lights out for the rest of the year and he hits, you know, 30 bombs and his average is up near 300 and he's, you know, then we're in a different situation. But right now that hasn't been his Padres career, especially if they're talking about, like, you know, I mean, obviously it's all rumor and who knows, but if they're talking about going after Otani, it's like, yeah, take that money and give it to Otani. I'd rather have somebody like Otani on the team than I would hoping that Juan Soto can turn it around. Like, it's just, for me, it doesn't make a ton of sense to hand out, like you said, another mega contract to a guy who doesn't deserve it.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point anyway, and that's not to say he's not, like, that's the thing that's so hard to talk about, is like, he is literally one of the great superstars
under
of this last decade. Yeah. Yeah. And so it's like, you get frustrated because you're like, it's in there. Where is it? Can it be now? Can it keep happening? Like, so it is very frustrating.
I just hope he's not like me and in his head, you know, laying his head on his pillow at night going, did I blow a $400 million deal? You know, and then it's just this cyclical thing where you can't get back on track. I hope he's not like me. Obviously, that's why I'm not a baseball player, is because I couldn't let things go. And in baseball, you got to like forget about what you did 5 minutes ago and move on, or else you'll go crazy. So I don't know. I really am rooting for the guy. I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer on him. I'm just waiting to see what everyone else has said he is. And it feels like starting to become a long wait, you know?
That's fair.
Well, like, operating under the idea that, like, okay, the offensive struggles that have started the season off as like a, you know, 500 team, that there's too many talented guys to not start hitting, you know? I mean, it's just too many people Manny Machado usually has a slow start. Last year, he didn't have a slow start, which put him into the MVP conversation. But I mean, he's going to pick it up. Xander's a rock, obviously, but the pitching is something that we talked about all offseason, and it does appear to be it's going to be a problem all year if they don't make a move. Joe Musgrove came back this weekend, and, you know, Yu Darvish had a little tweak, a calf thing, and was pulled out of it in the sixth inning, you know. But he's fine, I guess. But, you know, he's a year older, and Blake Snell is Blake Snell. I mean, I don't know.
He's C minus Blake Snell right now.
But he's in the category of a guy who is a starting major league pitcher. Mm-hmm. And then they're running out, you know, these other guys like Waka and Martinez and, you know, and Ryan Weathers, who's looked okay, I guess. But it doesn't feel like they have a full five-man staff, really. And
no,
the people that they do have injury questions. I don't know, you know, where do you think this goes? I mean, obviously AJ is prone to make moves and can do something, and they probably will have to before the end of the, you know, before the playoff push. But where are you guys on that?
I mean, I think we see changes before the deadline when it comes to the pitching staff, for sure. Like, it doesn't, you're right. Like, it just feels like a weird, ever evolving rotation. Musgrove didn't look amazing in his, when he returned, but that's, you know, whatever. I trust that he'll be fine. Yu Darvish is another year older. Blake Snell is doing whatever he's doing, trying to figure it out. He was so great the second half of last season. And it's like, you kind of go, what was the change? You know, what was the change that happened that made your second half amazing that for some reason you forgot about in the off season? It's just those little things where it just feels like the guys aren't there yet. And I don't know why. I actually, maybe Waka, you know, listen, I like Michael Waka. I don't have a lot of things. I feel like people are putting too much pressure on Michael Waka to be something that he's not. He had a
great his first game was like Cy Young, but since then it's been.
Yeah, he's, I think
did he's
make
fine. An all-star team? He must have made an all-star team. With like
he was great for a few seasons, man. Yeah. He was really good. And he feel like he can be serviceable as like a number five for sure, but I feel like for some reason people treat him like he's supposed to be an ace or something. And I'm like, no, like he's a four or five at best. You can't let the guy go more than five innings. Like it's, you know, unless he's absolutely dealing, but like, it's, you know, for me, it's like, I feel like people want him to be something that he is not and hasn't been for a long time. And, but I, other than that, I like him. Like, it's like, there's nothing about him that makes me go Michael Waka. It just makes me go like, yeah, it's Michael Waka.
I'm getting Garrett Richards vibes. Just like, we want this to be, he had like a moment, you know, Garrett and we Richards. Want that. We want that to be what it is.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Totally.
Just, these arms just change and it's over, but not that Waka's like over, but yeah, I get what you're saying. It's like, if that was what your hopes were, you know, I don't know.
Sorry, Travis, you got, you didn't.
No, I was just going to say, we have nothing to worry about. Isn't Pomerantz coming back soon? To save everything.
We don't say that name on this podcast. That does that name. We don't say that.
Hey, I mean, there's always Anderson Espinosa. He's always.
I mean,
I feel like Pomerantz is always like rumored in the news to just about to be ready to come back, and then I never see a transaction where he actually comes back.
Travis, Drew Pomerantz is never coming back.
Isn't there a $20 million
just down
coming?
The tube, there's, right?
The Padres always have a picture with the last name Allen. Isn't there one?
There's one of the better Allens. Yeah. Logan, Dave, Ray. There's somebody who's coming up. Here's what I'd like to see happen. Honestly, like, one of the things that kind of is frustrating me a little bit, although there seems to be a rhyme and reason to it, is like the platooning of Cruz and Carpenter. Like, I know that people like it because it's left and right platoon at the DH and whatever, you know. But I just feel like I'm going to say something and it's going to get, if anybody listens to it, it's, you know, they'll be like, what? But I will just say this. Cruz is the second best hitter on the team right now, right? Like, he's just lights out amazing. And I don't see why we don't every day DH him, let Carpenter play first and move Crone back to second. And then hear me out, Braid Kim for a relief pitcher.
Should have done that this offseason. I don't know.
I think that Kim still has a lot of value. He's defensively, he's really, really good. Yeah. Can play all over the diamond. I don't think you have trouble finding a suitor for Kim. I think what we could have got for him last year, we can't get now, but we can get a good reliever, I think, for the guy, which is what we need right now, is another solid reliever. If you can get him out of there for another reliever, move Crone to second, let Carpenter play first every day. I don't see a problem with this idea. So Cruz can DH, and then you can fill in the DH spot with Manny on an off day, or whoever needs the off day, you know, could still keep their bat in lineup. Who knows if you know, Carpenter's played first. I'm sure he's not defensively as good as Cronenworth has been. I think Crone's been really good at first. A few miscues here and there, but that's going to happen. That is what my hope would be. If there needs to be a tinker, that could be the tinker.
It does seem, I mean, they did, I think since we last recorded that the Padres did extend Cronenworth. So I mean,
he's not going anywhere.
He is a natural second base middle infielder. So it's, I don't know. I mean, it seems like if Carpenter's not the long-term first baseman, but they should be looking to fill that with a more power, you know?
Well, and it's like
that's interesting. Yeah.
I mean, you have people you could put at first base, you know, it's like there's good defense. Like, I mean, listen, we have Bogarts for 10 years. He's not gonna play shortstop all 10 of those years, and he can obviously hit. So what's the problem with, you know, shifting him to first after a couple of seasons, you know what I mean? But like, I don't think in my mind, you have Carpenter and Cruz who are professional baseball hitters. They have proven for season after season that they can be professional baseball hitters. And I don't think you get the proper value out of them by either oring them all the time.
Yeah.
Like those guys need to get at bats and need a hit. They're old. Like, you know, they're going to lose their rhythm. I just don't think you get the best value out of them by sitting one guy for 2 days, sitting the other guy for a day. You know, I don't think it plays right. You know, and this is my, you know, very uneducated opinion, but.
especially when they're both like, if Cruz is the second best hitter, Carpenter's got to be the third best right now. So why are you sitting the guys that are hitting the best? Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's like they have proven track records, and it's like there's no reason to not play them. Like
they're both
we keep trotting out
200s. They both have three.
We keep trotting out
three home runs.
Odor. Like I keep having to see
what is that?
Odor. It's like, hey, you know what would be great? I'll take Nelson Cruz suspect defense in the outfield over Odor. Like yeah, I just don't
why
get like
you, why is Odor the deal on the team? That should be even like a minor league relief pitcher spot than having the sixth outfielder who's batting 100?
You know,
like get Odor
Nelson
out of
here. Cruz Dallas is a month older than me. And Nelson Cruz is like 2 weeks older than me. So he's between us. He's like the last major league player that's older than me. So
dude, I
root for him.
Yeah. I think he's awesome. Like he's so cool to see on the team. Like when he came around and scored from first the other day, like it was one of my favorite things I've seen in a while. Like it's just like those dudes who are just professional hitters. Like that's all they want to do is hit the ball. And like, I just don't see the value in sitting them. Especially when you're trotting out guys like Odor and, you know, like who's the other guy they keep trotting out all the time?
Dixon, but he's gone.
Dixon.
He went down.
He's gone. But, you know, Jose Azucar or whatever it is. Yeah. You know, it's like, come on, man. Like, this isn't like tryouts. Like, I just don't get it that we keep trotting all these guys out. And it's like, it makes me sad for the old days when if Bochy was still the manager. And, we would have, who was it? We'd have like Klesko in the outfield or Lankford or something in the outfield. And then it was almost like every game in the seventh inning, they would put Kerry Robinson in his spot. It was just like, that was, you know, later innings, it was defensive replacement. It didn't matter. It's like, just do that. Put Nelson Cruz out there or, you know, something. And then at the end, just put Azucar out there, whatever his name is, for the last two innings. It just, to me, it's like, what are we doing? Why are we trying to give these guys more rope than is necessary when we're supposed to be a playoff team, you know? I love Kim, but if he was gone, I wouldn't be sad. It wouldn't bother me.
Somebody's going to have to go. I mean, they're going to have to do something to go into a playoff series. I'm assuming you and Musgrove are the 1 and 2, and then you need that third starter. I don't know.
You need Snell to do something.
Yeah. So Travis, you went to a game,
yes.
What was the experience?
Well, I just want to say, like, I want Juan Soto to do well because I want his bobblehead to increase in value. I mean, they were already going for like $50 on eBay, and I got three of those bad boys after my trip. So anyway, it was so different, Nick. I don't think I've ever been to a Padres game like that before in my life. And I've been to hundreds, not probably thousands, but close
enough.
What
is the pitch? What is the pitch clock doing to the live experience? Is it?
It's ruining the live experience.
I haven't been to a
game
yet.
It's ruining it. Well, I guess if you're in a ballpark that doesn't have any lines or crowds, it's probably fine. But when my wife went to go get us food, she missed two innings.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
the game is incredibly fast live now. If you go pee, you will miss baseball. There's no way you're going to pee between innings or anything like that at a Padres game this year and not miss baseball because it's so crowded. Mm. I've never been to a game. We got there a little early, not as early as I'd like, but there was a line at least 50 to 60 people outside of the Padres store to get into the store.
Yeah.
I've never seen that before. I've been many opening days, been to many sellout games, never seen anything like that before. So it was different. It was very different. It felt very crowded. It felt very much like a more of a like a Disneyland type of adventure than a I'm going to my local ballpark to watch a baseball game. It was really weird. And I don't want to complain. I don't want to sound like, oh, you're the old school fan and now all these new kids are out here. But I did not see any ushers. That was one of the weirdest things to me this whole season. And I don't know why. Maybe it was what they were wearing or whatever. But one of my favorite things about Padre games, and they used to like feature them in the commercials. The guy would yell out.
Yeah.
There was like none of that kind of thing at the game. Like if they weren't even stopping you between innings to, you know how they usually say, wait until the batter before you walk down in front of people. None of that. All of that was like gone. There was no ushers. There was nobody in control, or it just was like massive fans eating and drinking and cheering and all that stuff. But the game was pretty bad. And I don't know. It was just a weird experience. I'm like, I guess my expectations were really high because we're spending money now. We have, and it was just, it wasn't that fun. And I've had a lot of fun at games where we stunk and maybe the baseball wasn't great, but it was like a baseball experience. And this was like, I don't know. It almost created like anxiety in me. You know what I mean? It wasn't like going to the ballpark. It was like going to an experience and here we go. And everything's so expensive. Hats are $60 and beers are $16.50 and they're out of pizza. And this line, I don't know. It was just very different from your typical, you know, 40 years of going to Padre games. And I'm fine with it. If we win, we get a championship, all worth it. If this is just like we spent a lot of money and now it's like a bad ballpark experience, I don't know. It's just weird. It was definitely a very unique game experience in all my years of going to Padre game.
I keep hearing people say, with this new stuff, you just have to get there early and get all your food and sit. Oh, yeah. And so you can eat your food. You got your food. And then if you want another beer, then you can hop up and get another beer. I know there's like, I forget, there was one stadium, maybe Milwaukee, but they lifted the seventh inning beer stoppage.
So did the Padres. Yeah.
Oh, the Padres did it too. Yeah. I know a lot of teams were starting to do it once they did it, which makes sense. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of one of those things though, you know, like, I get what you're saying, and it is a bummer that the experience at the park is worse for a lot of people. But like the other side of that is that you're watching a 4-hour game, and like it's like if you're not at the stadium and you're sitting at home, and you're like, I want to go to bed, but I want to watch the end of this game. It's like, or you're just watching dudes. I mean, somebody said this and I forget who it was. It might've been like Michael Bauman, but it was like, they did it to themselves. Like they did this to themselves, like with all their rituals and all their walking around the mound and getting ready and shaking off and throwing to first and throwing to first and throwing to first and stepping out of the box and putting up your gloves and getting it. It's like, they did this to themselves and then they did it to the fans. And it's like, there were times where I remember, I forget who that one pitcher was, man, pitched for the Mets for forever. But like, you just knew when he started pitching, you were in for a real long night.
Yeah.
And you're just like, dude, this sucks, man. Just throw the ball. Like, and so I get that it's not as fun, but at the same time, it's like, sometimes you were just there forever. And you're like this, like Travis, when we went to that playoff game, like Tyler Anderson is a slow worker.
Yeah.
And we were there for a long time watching five innings of real boring baseball. And it wasn't like, if we could have sped through that time, that would have been great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't hate the pitch clock, especially as a TV viewer, but the logistics of the ballpark, they haven't figured it out yet. Let's put it that way. So
sure. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I get that. Totally.
They didn't, whatever they had, they didn't have enough of. Like, they have one pizza place, I think, out in, what is that, right field corner area. They have the pizza port. And you, mm-hmm. from my seats, I got to walk all the way over there. I'm so excited. I love the pizza port, and I get a Swami's, and it's all great. And then they're out in like the fourth inning. You're like, you're yeah. out of pepperoni pizza at, I don't well, know. It's like
I do
the ballpark experience is to get all this great food from all over the place. And like, you're running out. And I don't know. It just.
I do think they are they have vastly underestimated how many people are going to be coming to games. I feel like that's another thing that they just didn't. I think they assumed we were just going to have the same turnout. And it's
the economy, and they can't find the service. Literally, they can't find the people to do it. And that might be a thing. I don't blame them for that. You know, people don't want to. Those kind of jobs are much harder to fill than they used to be.
But I'll tell you this, dude, it's when I used to work at SeaWorld, we would forecast the amount of employees we would need based on the previous year. Mm-hmm. So like, that's how you do your forecasts. And like, they're probably doing the same thing. So it's like, you're trying to forecast, you know, your season ticket sales are probably going to be fairly similar to what they were the previous year. And you can use that as a base, but like the amount of people who are going to games this year.
This year they sold out season tickets.
But I'm just saying, even then, it's like you're still not going to use that same number as your forecast. I'm not saying I'm just saying like they're forecasting based on the attendance they're used to in a previous season. So it's like,
yeah,
they do need to fix it. They do need to catch up. Like they do need to realize, hey, no, like people are showing up. Like we're selling out Wednesday day games. You know, it's like you need to like be prepared for this. And yeah, you're right. I think it's pace of play. And they haven't figured it out yet.
Sounds like it. I think they're gonna slow the pitch clock a little bit. They're not gonna have it this fast. I think they're gonna find.
We'll see.
It sounds like they're gonna.
And like on TV, I don't hate it. I do like a longer game, just as far as like how much time it takes up in my day when I'm working the yard or whatever. I just like a long game, kind of. But I do also like the pitch clock as a thing to keep you engaged in the game in between pitches, right? Like you're always, it's like a shot clock in basketball. I do like that element of it.
I don't know.
I'm conflicted. I don't have a silver bullet answer to fix it for sure.
All these leagues they have to struggle with the question of, should we make decisions based on the people that aren't fans to bring them in? Or do we take care of the audience that we have and keep the product the same way that they know because they are our base? And I think hockey has struggled with that, and
totally,
you know, every sport has to ask that question, like, are we making decisions to bring in this other audience who's not as hardcore, but that would make a more crossover product? And this is, I didn't think it would be as effective as it has been. I don't know what the numbers are as far as if it's increasing TV viewership or anything like that, but it is a drastic change to the rhythm of the game, which I think a lot of people, I don't think they really anticipated the backlash of it, where people really liked that old pace. The slowness was part of the fun, or, you know, it's that slow burn that people,
but
especially
it's meeting
going
in the,
live.
It's meeting, you know, in the middle though. It's like,
yeah,
it's like the, when our dads went to games, they weren't 4 hours long. They were 3 hours long. You know, they were like 3:20. So it's like, now we're getting games that are 2.5 hours long. And it's like, so it's kind of, it's just getting it back to that kind of sweet spot where you are out for the evening instead of you're out for a couple hours. You know, it's figuring that out, but that's what it is. It's like the players slowed it down to 4 hours. TV breaks didn't help, but those aren't the big stinker. You know, it's literally that side by side that whoever did that during the off season, during spring training, where they did the side by side between one batter and one inning. Like that's the kind of shit that you're like, yeah, we don't need any more of that.
Yeah.
But anyway,
well, it's something to look at. I think they're going to adjust it, and hopefully, you know, Rob Manfred's not I'm not the biggest fan of his, of our commissioner here, but I think
he's no Bud Selig.
He's not. Yeah. Back when we had a man in charge.
Yeah, man.
But it's Bud. Like, yeah, I don't know. Like, it seems like they could definitely refine this and tweak it, but it does. I don't think we're ever going to go back to what it was, and we should just be prepared for it because it is working. It's amazing how fast it is now.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Go ahead, Travis. No, you go, Travis.
I would just say my advice is if you have more than one beer at a game, drink one on the way, have one, bring one in the car, pop it as you get there because you won't have time to get to, and eat before the game because, again, they could figure that out. The hot dog was actually one of the best hot dogs I have. But Nick, okay, the tri-tip nachos, man, they have let those suckers way slide down. Ooh. Maybe they're too popular. Yeah. I don't know, but they're not what they used to be at all. So
it's your last year. One of the last games I went to, those nachos were pretty subpar even then. Yeah. So I believe you on that.
I didn't know that.
And then one last thing, and I just have to say this out loud. It's like the end of an era. It's shows how old I am, but I found out this year that there's no such thing anymore as unused ticket nights because there's no such thing as tickets anymore. So as a season ticket holder, I was always like, oh, I couldn't make it tonight. I'm not going to stress. You hang on to those tickets and there's other games that you can exchange those for. Your tickets now disappear. If you don't use them, they vanish into oblivion. And I get it. We're moving on. But it was like, I really had one of those moments where I'm like, wow, it's like the end of an era. It's like we're living in a different time where like tickets to a game are no longer a real thing. They're a figment of our imagination that gets scanned and then vanish into, I don't know. It was just a weird, weird thing. So there's no, if you don't use your tickets or you don't sell them, they are gone. FYI, people.
Can I just say this before we wrap up real quick?
Yes.
Has nothing to do with the Padres. I'm really happy that the Pirates are doing really well. And I just have always loved the Pirates. I like those teams that have been around for 400 years. Like they're making me happy when they're good again. And there's something special about it all happening with McCutchen back in a Pirates uniform.
Yeah,
it's really cool. And I really hope that they can keep it up. Like legitimately, really, really hope that the Pirates can keep it up. I think it'd be super awesome.
That is the best ballpark in Major League Baseball.
I want to go so bad.
It is unbelievable. I think it's the best one.
Awesome. Next year, I'm going to try to plan a trip if you guys want to come. But next year, I'm going to try to plan a trip where we hit Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Cleveland, and then maybe one more in that little nook. But man, maybe Philly. I don't know. But dude, I just love the Pirates, and I love Kutch. McCutchen's like just one of the great ball players of this generation.
Yeah.
I really hope they can like have the lasting power. I mean, the Central, their division kind of sucks anyway. So I think they have a good chance. But anyway,
Pirates. It's exciting. I mean, they've been a cautionary tale. I mean, when they had that run, I think about 10 years ago, and then McCutchen, and then they looked like they were going somewhere, and then the window closed and they restarted again. And that's always been in the back of my mind as a Padres fan, like how this could blow up. And every team's trying to win a World Series, and a lot of teams do the best they can to plan and make it work, and then it just doesn't happen, and that could happen to you. So it's exciting. It's a great baseball town. It's a great sports city, obviously.
Yeah.
And, I
honestly say they deserve it, and I hope that they keep going.
Yeah. Well, we can wrap up now. This is the Kept Faith Podcast. Check out Dallas's album on Bandcamp.
Probably on iTunes by the time you're hearing this. Yeah. Check out iTunes, Apple Music.
Upcoming on the podcast, we didn't get to it tonight, and I want to find maybe talk to the podcast that we talked to last year. I'd like to dig in deeper into like the Oakland A's situation at some point. So try to get we talked to an A's podcast last year, the Tailgate podcast. I haven't asked them yet, but we should.
Get them on.
Connecting them. Yeah. This is actually really upsetting to me. I, I, pretty bummed out about it as a baseball fan that they're going to Vegas or just leaving Oakland.
But people don't go to games.
I know. It's a problem.
Like, I mean, we can talk about it more, but it's like right now the Reds have had the worst attendance, I think, in the league this season, which is unfortunate because they actually have like a pretty exciting team. And they're the oldest professional baseball team in baseball. And I think the other day they drew like 2,000 fans or something like that to a game. Mm-hmm. It was the lowest announced attendance in modern history or something like that. But it's like, you can't draw fans. I don't know. Like, what do you want people to do? And it's like, ownership's a big deal. Ownership's a big part of that. So it's not on the city solely, but you know.
Well, let's save it for another episode where we talk to somebody who's, you know, who's on the ground and, you know, they can give us more insight to how this all happened. Because it's been a long process. It mirrors exactly like what we went through with the Chargers, I think. It's just, it's been a long process of maybe they'll get something done in Oakland, maybe not. And then, you know, we kind of dug into it last time when we talked to those guys. So I'll try to get them on. But yeah, we got a team and they're good. They're going to be good.
500, baby.
We're selling out our ballpark.
Definitely 500.
So, all right. Well, thanks for listening to Kept Faith and keep the faith. We'll see you next time.
All right. Good night. Go Padres.